Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hour number two here on your Friday as we continue on Sports Map Radio. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. We'll also get into a NFL news that's not news, but is news, maybe shouldn't be news. It's just a tangled web we weave, but I got that for you coming up. The Ryder Cup getting underway. They've just introduced the players, Sergio Garcia, John Rahm, Justin Thomas, and Jordan Spieth. That is underway. We got a lot of NFL to get to as well as we lead into week number three. Last night's game may have told us really not a lot about where the Texans are going, but the Carolina Panthers have a number of different storylines, whether it is the injury to Christian McCaffrey and how that is going to be down the road. Could be weeks, could be a couple weeks, could be a lot of weeks. We don't know yet, but it was a hamstring injury. And how does it affect them going forward after a 3-0 start to the season? But also the way Sam Darnold is playing, because he's playing pretty good. He's found sort of a new life. 300 yards passing yesterday, two rushing touchdowns. And as I was saying in hour number one, an opportunity for him to get a new life and a new location out of the shadow of New York and all the pressure of trying to win on a terrible team. Carolina's not that great, but there are some pieces. When you have Christian McCaffrey, you do have an opportunity to win. Now that opportunity to win without him has to be on his shoulders, and we'll see where he goes with that. But it's when you add one game to the schedule, just 17, it is more difficult to figure out kind of exactly where a 3-0 start would be. I know it's just one game, but it does feel like we need to have an extra week to start saying, all right, 4-0 now, maybe this is something we got to talk about. 3-0 still feels like, well, we do want to know your opponents. We do want to know what your schedule is going to look like, right? They're in a division where New Orleans should be decent, but Tampa Bay is going to rule that division. And that is the problem with sort of looking at the Carolina Panthers and giving them some credit or maybe figuring out that they could be a playoff team. But I love their defense. Last night, their defense, even though going up against a rookie quarterback, their defense was fantastic. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next. And we'll continue along with the NFL heading into week three as we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What a idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb, the Friday edition. We go into the weekend, heavy sports weekend, and we give you the good, the bad, and the dumb to go with it. So what is the good of the day, Ron Culver?
Is there another way to kick off the good, bad, the dumb with this type of good, and it's a Saban rant?
Oh, I love Saban rants.
Saban rants are the best. So, Nick Saban, if you don't know who he is, head coach of the Alabama football team.
I can't believe you just had to say that.
I'm just, there's a first-time listener out there all the time, right? Just
well, he sure. May be the first-time listener, but it doesn't mean he doesn't know who Nick Saban is.
No, well, I know.
He doesn't know who we are.
And we can't assume any. You know what happens when we assume.
Right, that's true.
So, but anyways, he was asked a question about tight end Jaleel Billingsley, right? And Saban didn't really like the question so much, so this is how he responded to it.
Well, he's doing what he's supposed to do. He practices better. He's more engaged. He's more focused on what he's supposed to do, and he's having more positive performance on the field, which is what any player is supposed to do. I think did any of you play sports? I mean, the coach is supposed to play the best players, right? And then it's up to the players to do what they're supposed to do so they get to play because they become one of the best players. So that's what he's doing now. But I don't know, maybe if you didn't play, maybe that's not something that you quite get.
Go to Aaron.
So to answer your question, he's doing what he's supposed to do.
Ah, I love Nick. When you get to a point in life where you can just say whatever you want. You don't have any ramifications. No one's going to challenge you. You're the king of the state. You're the king of the sport. Just roll with whatever you want to roll with.
Yeah.
It's up to you.
I mean, you're a living legend going down as the greatest college football coach of all time. And there's really, you can't make an argument that he's not.
No.
You know, being able to do what he's doing in this era.
Talking about this earlier this week, Alabama's as good, as better. They're better than they've ever been in the history of Alabama football, and Alabama football has been good at many stages
yeah.
of history of college football.
I mean, they have the legendary coach himself, Bear Bryant, that many people model coaching right. after. And Nick, make the argument that Nick Saban's better than him.
Modern college football with different ways of recruiting and different exposure. And I've said this many times. Back in the old days, a college coach would go recruit, and then he would stand in front of the media and go, "We got a great group of kids." And the media would go, "Yeah, I guess you do. I don't know. I don't know how that linebacker from Pennsylvania plays. I guess he's okay." But now, with 100 recruiting sites, and you have to answer to every five-star athlete you don't land, Saban has perfected the art of recruiting in a more tough environment. He's brilliant.
I mean, it's literally an NFL factory.
Yeah.
Alabama is an NFL vocational school.
Yep. He's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
He's what we remember watching as kids in the 80s. He's ITT Tech.
And what's amazing about him is he just didn't go to Alabama and use Alabama to be – he won a national championship at LSU.
Yeah.
So he's remarkable. So good for him.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. It would be hard. I don't know if I'd want the challenge every single day of dealing with that guy, but I think it would be better than some of the vanilla coaches that are out there now.
Oh, definitely.
You know, I think it's much more exciting to have to deal with him and some of these rants than anything else. You got to be kidding. No, never mind. I can't watch this. Do the show and watch the Ryder Cup at the same time. I got to change the
quick programmer report. This is Tony's final segment of the day.
All right, what's the bad of the day? Might just have been that.
We have three then, if we include right. that one. We actually have two bads of the day.
Can I tell people what just happened?
Yes, you can.
Real quick, let me just tell you what happened. This is why I'm changing the channel. I'm changing the channel right now. I've got something else on because I'll just tape it and watch it later. So the opening hole of the Ryder Cup. They're playing alternate shot, and Sergio Garcia put his ball in the bunker, and then Justin Thomas put his in the middle of the fairway, and Jordan Spieth hit it to a couple of feet, and John Rahm blasted it out of the bunker to the back end of the green, and Sergio Garcia almost chipped in for birdie, which would have put the pressure on Justin Thomas to nail his birdie putt. Instead, he just knocked it to within a couple of inches. As it was rolling, it had the trajectory of going in, which is why I said you got to be kidding. So, anyway, what's the bad of the day?
Well, we have two.
Okay.
All right. The first one is Ryder Cup related. There was a celebrity event happening yesterday.
Golf
event.
Yeah,
and
right.
One of our guys, Harry Potter, actually not Harry Potter himself, Malfoy.
Yeah,
the actor Tom Felton.
Yeah, yeah.
He had to be carted off, collapsed.
Do we have any news on that or what happened to him? Is he fine?
Still no. I mean,
he just collapsed.
He's fine, but he just collapsed. I don't know if it's the Wisconsin air that got to him. I'm not sure.
Wasn't the heat? It's kind of chilly there. Yeah, that's kind of scary. He's still a young guy. He's like in his 30s.
Yeah. He just turned 34.
Yeah.
But he was conscious.
That's very scary.
So who knows?
Yeah, that's.
I mean, we'll have more word on it as word comes in. But
right,
you know, I had to mention Harry Potter.
I heard. I have seen nothing, but he is such a good dude. He is such.
Yeah.
He played a villain in that movie, and he just he's one of the greatest. Well, not really. He had an arc, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he had a closing arc, but he was one of the most liked people on the set, and he was just a great kid. Like even when he was little, and he had to play the bully. He was just a very, very liked kid. He's a liked young man as the series progressed, and they say he's a really great dude. He's still friends with all the cast and whatnot. So
I'm sure
a lot of love.
He's like the fourth biggest cast member.
Without question,
of that crew.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, what's the second?
But yesterday or maybe earlier this week, scientists revealed that a solar superstorm could happen.
Now, what does that mean?
Now. You know, solar storms happen all the time where the sun just kind of emits electromagnetic waves from the surface of the sun.
Right.
And it does affect us. And there have been times where we've had really, really big ones. And they're saying we're kind of due. It's kind of like almost like the San Andreas Fault. It's due for a big earthquake. So we're kind of due for a big one. But the problem is that we live in a different technological era now. So if this solar storm is to happen, and what scientists predict, if it is a super storm, it could cause an internet apocalypse. which means that we could be without internet for months.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What will we do? We'll be back in the Stone Ages.
The 80s.
We'll be fighting off woolly mammoths and Gordon Gecko.
Yeah.
Right?
But
From hostile takeovers of your airplane company.
And that's where I kind of leave the bad is, like, you know, we became a society, and it feels like overnight. Like, when you were saying this earlier, when we, you know, they'll look at different decades, like, oh, from 1570 to 1580, you know, this happened. But we just kind of glump it up, you know, put it all in one big pile and say, that was the 1500s.
Right.
Our dependency on internet is so tiny in the grand scheme of things when you think about it.
It
really did happen overnight.
It really did. It's really, you're right. It really is amazing. I know I always date myself when I talk about the sort of entry of the internet into my business, right? I remember doing sports shows. And when I was younger, I was a producer for this nightly sports show we had on this news talk station. And when it was my turn to host, Dave Preston and I sometimes would get opportunities to host. We would go to the newspaper and we would cut out articles in the newspaper. And that's what we would use.
Yeah.
So we would say, oh, did you hear about this story that's going on with the Bruins? And it would be a cutout of that article because we didn't print anything out. There was nothing to print out, right? That's what we had to do. So as this technology came about, now I can't even remember a time where I didn't have, like, what I did. How did I know sports before I had access to every game and every statistical element of that game?
I mean, for a morning show like ours, it would have just been, you know, hey, you know, on your way in, buy a newspaper.
Right.
And then quickly thumb through it, or, you know, during the breaks, thumb through it to find different stories to read because we didn't know what was going on in different parts of the country.
I know people don't like social media and the internet comes with bad things, but I do want to remind people, nostalgia is your memory of good stuff.
Yeah.
It really is. And so I always caution people when people say the good old days. There wasn't a such thing as the good old days. Your mind thinks that because it tends to get rid of the bad stuff. But if you did go back in time to whatever era you felt like was better than today, you'd find the problems of that era too. Right? That's got to be careful. But I wish it feels like no matter how social media was created, we just as a species gravitate towards being negative and nasty. We just tend to do that, right? It was inevitable that it was heading in that direction. But I'd be interested to see if that actually occurred, how we would deal with no internet.
Yeah.
How we would survive.
My biggest thing, the first thing I thought of was just shopping would be different.
It would be, yeah. All of a sudden, the mall people would be like, oh, need us now, right?
Yeah. You're
totally staying away from us back in the day. Places empty, big cavern. Now you want to come and shop here. Okay,
What happened. There's one store out there that if it happened, like, oh, we should have waited. We should have stayed open one more day before closing up.
Right.
Darn it. Right.
Darn it. All right, that was two bads, right?
That was two bads.
What's
that were on
the dumb?
Now, I fully reserve the right to correct myself if I'm wrong about this.
Okay.
All right. But I don't think I will be. Netflix announced yesterday that before the end of 2021, we will have Tiger King 2.
Oh, no.
Yes. And like I said, I reserve the right. I'm saying it right now that if I am wrong, I will admit that I was wrong about why. Do we need Tiger King 2?
Why do we need Tiger King 2?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
Because here's the argument that I was having.
They wrap that up.
Yeah, but here's the argument that we, you know, for the original Tiger King. It was a phenomenon. And I don't know if the documentary was good, but it was the fact that it was at the beginning stages of the pandemic and we were all talking about it. So
absolutely.
There was a camaraderie that we had being in isolation that we could all talk to each other about something since we couldn't see each other face to face.
We talked about this at the time. We were wondering, look, we think it still would have been one of those things that sort of captivated us.
Maybe.
But I think the pandemic threw that up 100 notches.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was really viral. Like here's the deal. How many times do you get told, oh, do you watch that show? And you go, no. They go, oh, all of the seasons are on Hulu. And you're like, I don't have time to watch all. But at the pandemic, we were like, Well, thank you, because I have 7 hours in my house that I don't know what to do with.
I can't go outside.
You've just given me something to do in that time while I'm locked in my house.
Yeah, can't go for a walk, can't go to the grocery store, can't do this, can't do that. So, yeah, we had nothing to do but sit in front of a TV.
So when somebody gives you something that requires 8-9 hours of your time, we were like, go ahead. And that's what happened with Tiger King.
Yes.
So we were like, sure, I can bang this out in a day. And I got nothing else to do with my life.
And it was fascinating, too, because, I mean, it was just so much craziness to it that it was like, I can't believe this is reality. Maybe it's good that we're locked indoors because I don't want to be a part of this reality. Now, here's the issue that I have with it, too, okay? I mean, besides, you know, yeah, we wrapped it up. None of the main people, I think, are going to be in it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we all know Joe Exotic is still in jail. I don't know how influence he's going to have in prison. I don't know how much documentary camera time he was allowed.
Will we be able to get an update on the sex cult zookeeper from South Carolina?
Well, why wait? I will let you know right now.
Yeah.
So we have Jeff Lowe and wife Lauren. You remember them? They took over the Joe Exotic Zoo.
Right.
Well, they lost that zoo to Carol Baskin in a lawsuit because Carol Baskin was originally suing Joe Exotic. So she obtained that zoo. And then her first move was to close it down.
Good job.
So that zoo is closed. Carol Baskin has already said, lose my number. I do not want to be a part of this.
Good for her.
What do you want to know about the sex cult guy?
Yeah, the guy that's got those women working for him that people were like, this is weird.
Yeah, well, quick update on him is that he has lost his zoo as well.
Good.
Is suffering from the wrath of PETA. Not because of the polygamy, but because he was allowing Chris Brown's daughter, Royalty, to ride one of his elephants. he has lost, I don't know if he's lost it yet, but he was indicted in Virginia for animal cruelty and felony wildlife trafficking.
I don't know much about the industry, so I'm speaking way out of my league. I just think personal zoos should be outlawed.
Yeah.
Is that... Like, if somebody comes to me and go, hey, man, you don't understand. We kind of need them, and here's why. All right, maybe I can be swayed. But right now I'm like, if you want a personal zoo, nah. You shouldn't own tigers and elephants. And you know, it should be done by a business that knows how to do that kind of thing.
Just own a dog and some goldfish.
All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb on a Friday as we continue. We got that news that's not news that is news. That's coming up next on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, when you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com, just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly with O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com today. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. So, Tom Brady's trainer said that Bill Belichick didn't evolve as Brady was getting older. He still treated Brady in New England as a 20-year-old kid. So I told you that this was news that's not news, but still is kind of news, because it's really what it is. Raise your hand if this is shocking to anybody that Tom Brady's trainer would come out and go, yeah, the coach didn't treat Tom the way Tom wanted to be treated as he got older. That's Bill Belichick's MO. We kind of realize that, right? That's what he was doing. No one was going to be bigger than the team. Everything was about the team. The first Super Bowl win they had against the Rams, they came out as a team. And as Tom Brady got more and more famous and winning Super Bowls and used more established as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, Belichick probably had, in his mind, had two choices. I could treat him differently like everybody else, even though everyone in this building knows why I would do that and would not have a problem with me doing that, or I can still treat him like every other 20-year-old that is in this building. And he elected to do the latter. Now, did it lead to Tom Brady leaving? Not really. I think it's part of it. I think Brady is happier that he doesn't have this around, like he's treated kind of as a 44-year-old multi-Super Bowl champion in Tampa. But Alex Guerrero, who makes this claim, is not breaking any news. I think we know it. But it's news because of this reason. correct me if I'm wrong, but does it feel like Brady's camp is now kind of more openly talking about what was going on in New England to sort of take a victory lap now that Brady's a Super Bowl champion in Tampa? It feels like before everyone was like, I can't really say anything. I don't want to say anything. And then the moment Brady goes to Tampa and then they win a Super Bowl, it's like, okay, the gloves are off now. Now we can start telling you why, what the relationship was really like. And I think that is more the Tom Brady's family, friends, whatever, who is ever going to speak about this is now doing the, see, we kind of told you so. We couldn't really say it back then, but yeah, ha ha. Tom Brady is the Super Bowl champion without Bill Belichick. Y'all were wondering how that was going to work out. Well, we'll remind you how that worked out. I think that's more what's happening here than Alex Guerrero trying to break some news that we already knew. We already knew about this about Bill Belichick.
Here's another thing. Why is his trainer always something to talk about?
I know.
I have no idea who Peyton Manning's trainer was.
That's funny, but it's glad you mentioned that.
Yeah, I have no idea who Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you know all these guys have personal trainers. I mean, why not, right? But we know about Alex Guerrero all the time.
Exactly. And here's the other thing, too. Like, if Tiger Woods' trainer was allowed to speak this free, Tiger would probably have him killed. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Tiger would fire him and then make sure no one ever hired him ever again for anything. Like for some athletes, these are things you are never, ever, ever allowed to talk about. Ever. And it seems like Brady is like, go ahead. It's all good. If you're an athlete and you hire a personal trainer, you sign that trainer to a non-disclose agreement. You say, look, you can't talk about anything about my career, anything about this workouts, anything about my current situation. If I'm going to pay you money to train me, these are the rules. You don't get to talk about what I've done, what I've said, how I've reacted, how I may have treated you. Like I'm holding you to this. Like, we're going to have a relationship, but I'm protecting me. Before we do anything else, before I pay you one nickel. And these guys pay these trainers a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of money. You have every right as an athlete to say, keep your mouth shut about anything you see here.
To that point, I can't remember Tiger Woods' caddy, Steve. What was his name?
Williams, yeah.
Steve Williams. You mean to tell me Steve Williams had no idea about what Tiger was doing?
Oh, of course.
During
Absolutely.
All that time?
Of course he did.
But, you know, I mean, that's a perfect example. I don't know if he signed, or if Tiger made him sign a non-disclosure, say, hey, don't ever talk about me going
to
Perkins.
Did. Yeah.
You know, yes, I like Perkins coffee. That's why I keep going to this one.
You kind of have to, because if you work with somebody for a long time, you're going to see them at their worst. And
yes.
They need to protect themselves. Like, you're going to see Woods in a... yell. You're probably going to see Woods, and I don't mean to pick on Woods, but you're probably going to see the athlete you work for yell at a hotel attendant for no reason because he's having a bad day and he's just ticked off, right? And you don't want somebody to take those nuggets and blow them up. See, like, what if you're Tiger Woods and you just and somebody brings room service and you freak out because the eggs are overdone? You're just like, ah! And you just freak out the guy. But then afterwards you go up to him and go, man, I'm so sorry. Here's $200, man. I'm so sorry. Do you think the guy is going to sell the story about you going back and apologizing with $200 in your hand, going, man, I'm really sorry I did that. I was just having a bad day. Or do you think it's going to be, this is what he does?
Yeah.
He does everywhere we go, no matter where we go. That's the angle. So that's why you got to protect yourself. What is Alex Guerrero doing every time there's an opportunity to chat about Brady's time, unless Brady gave him permission to do it?
And that's what we're getting at here.
Right.
And it just doesn't make any sense. Like, every single time there's a story, Alex Guerrero's at the forefront of it.
Do you think Tom goes, I want people to know that I'm what was going on, but I can, like, when I get asked, I just go, I loved my time in New England. I had a great time in New England. I have nothing but respect for the organization.
Yeah, but now we're hearing things from his trainer. We heard things from his father.
But do you think he goes to these people, go like, hey, you know what? If they ask you, go ahead, tell them what you want. I don't care. Because he knows that they will say, oh, it was miserable. Oh, it was so bad. Bill didn't even have respect for a guy that won him all these Super Bowls. Ah!
Didn't evolve.
Right, didn't evolve. Right. What is he supposed to do? Right? They won Super Bowls up until the last few years. Golly.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue with Wake Up Call. We got NFL schedule, a look at the NFL schedule coming up in hour number three. Now, if you're kind of new to the show, what we do is we go over every game. We don't tell you who we think is going to win, but we tell you some of the elements of the game that may make it attractive or some elements of the game that make it not attractive. So if you had an opportunity to watch that, but you wanted to do something else, there's, you know.
Basically, whether or not you should get cracking on that honey-do list.
That's right. That is correct. Back to this Tom Brady story. I kind of understand, like, okay, look, Alex Guerrero making the point, right, that Tom Brady at 30, 35, you know, 38, they're winning Super Bowls, and you want a separation, right? Like, you want to be treated a little differently. It's okay, right? Teams do that with superstars. They treat them a little differently. But I also think that what made the Patriots work really well is that they didn't do it. Because one of the things that I think you're concerned about when you're a coach is sort of a slippery slope, right? Is there a clear-cut case of superstardom when you have somebody like Tom Brady? Sure. But also, there is going to be players on the team that are stars. They're not superstars, but they're stars. And what do you do with them, right? If I give Brady a ton of leeway because he's a Super Bowl champion, do I do that to the players down the list and within the history of the program? Would I have done it to Julian Edelman? Would I have done it to Teddy Bruschi? Would I have done it to, you know, anybody else that was on that team that sort of emerged as a name in the league? If I give Brady a ton, do I give those guys a little, or do I just say, hey, in this building, this is the way it's going to be for everybody? I do think, I do think there is an attractiveness to that from players who were going to play for the Patriots, that it was going to be everybody is equal under this umbrella, you know, like not even Brady can get away with this, you know, kind of thing. And I think there's an attractiveness to there because at least you see that system in place. Now, obviously Brady is finding a different way of life in Tampa. Of course he is. You see him now. He's a lot more relaxed. Of course he is. He's set in who he is. He knows he's got a team that's winning. He's made the right decision in terms of going, you know, picking the right team. He's playing for a player's coach. That all works. But I don't think it's fair to say, because this is Brady in Tampa, that Bill Belichick was wrong to do what he did. But I will tell you, it is another way, though, that you can lose players. So there's a double-edged sword here. Belichick treating everybody the same is not going to be attractive to people who are genuinely stars and know they are. But it is going to be attractive to younger players or players on the verge to know that there is a system in place where winning is the only thing and they don't have to coddle the players. But going back to the sort of victory tour I feel like the Brady camp is doing, because you're right, it's not just Alex Guerrero. His dad is making comments. I do think this is coming at the direction of Brady to sort of tell his side without him ever having to speak on it. Why would he talk about these things when people are dropping the nuggets of information for him? He doesn't have to say, ha ha, New England. He just has to have people sort of kind of imply that's the reality. And then he just can say, nah, I don't know about that. I just love the organization. I'm just happy I spent my time there and won championships and, good, you know, it was a good experience, blah, blah, blah. And by the way, don't forget, next week, Tampa Bay is going to Foxborough to face the Patriots. I kind of can't wait to see what that's going to be about, what that's going
to
be like.
Now, do you think this might be all a precursor to drum up more hype?
It could be.
Unnecessarily, because there's already going to be hype around that game?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't think it matters. I mean, this is going to be the NBC Sunday night game. I don't know if it matters to the fans there. I think the fans go, I love my Patriots. I love them, but I get it. I get why he left, and I can't hate him. He's the best.
Well, it's like that commercial.
Right.
You know, where, you know, Brady's calling all the people, and they're saying he's in, and he calls that Boston bar, and, you know, the guy's like, it's like, still hate you. And, you know, he's like, yeah. And then as soon as he hangs up the phone, he's like, would you take it back? In a heartbeat.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I mean, right? That's how they all feel. I mean, Boston probably can't stand the fact that Brady went and won a Super Bowl with another team.
Sure.
But given, this, if he said, hey, Patriots, I'm going to come back. I want to lead you to another Super Bowl. He'd be, I mean, they would shut down the city for him. He'd have his own duck boat parade by himself.
You could make the argument, and there would be a lot, right? Bill Russell would be on that list for the Celtics, right? Like, you could make
Larry
the
Bird.
Argument. Yeah, Larry Bird, but you can make the argument. Nobody has given more to a fan base than Brady gave New England fans.
Yeah.
We are talking 20 years of excellence.
Minus
in a
one.
Sport where that doesn't exist.
Minus 20, one, which wasn't even his fault because he wasn't on the field.
Right, 20 years. And here's the thing. Even when he wasn't on the field, you knew the Patriots were still supposed to be relevant.
Yes.
Right? He gave them. So you could make the argument that no one singular athlete meant more to a fan base than him. Because Larry Bird, of course. Bill Russell, of course. But find me two decades. Find me a guy that was winning Super Bowls the second he got the starting job to going to them near the end. I know he didn't in his fight. His last pass was to Logan Ryan, which was a pick six. But find me somebody that was not closing out and just embarrassing to watch at times, right? Just like, oh God, he's so old. What is he still doing?
Because it's fine. What we'll say is, you know, he's won 7 Super Bowls, or you know, let's keep it with New England. He's won 6.
Right.
Right. But you went to 9.
It's unheard of. Let me tell you something. I have to kick myself sometimes to remind myself of this. So I became a Steeler fan at a young age, and I make no bones about this. I became a Steeler fan because they were winning, and the Patriots sucked. All right. I grew up in New England. I was born in Brooklyn, but I grew up in New England. Patriots were terrible, and the Steelers were winning, and I loved them. I liked their uniform. I liked Terry Bradshaw. I was collecting football cards. I'm like 6, 7 years old. So I barely remember them winning Super Bowl 14. Barely. Barely. But I wasn't even really old enough to just enjoy it, like buy gear and you know, all that stuff, right? But I was a Steeler fan, and I knew they won the Super Bowl. I didn't see them win a Super Bowl again until from 1980. Was that January of 1980. I didn't see them win a Super Bowl until 2005.
Yep.
Okay? So I'm going 25 years, right, until they won a Super Bowl again. Well, that would be February of 2006. No, that was 2005. That's an incredibly long time of me putting up with Cliff Stout, Mark Malone, who went to the AFC Champion Finals, Bubby Brister, Neil O'Donnell, right? All of the players, Merrill Hodge, Bam Morris, all of the guys that came in, Louis Lips, right? The list goes on and on of them not winning. And imagine, again, a five-year-old who's 25, and it's all he knows is that his team is fantastic and brilliant and awesome and always wins, or at least should always win. You could make the argument, again, nobody meant more to a fan base than him.
Yeah, and so, last year was probably the first real shock.
Right, right. So, yeah, exactly, right? Imagine if you're 24, right, and you're like, holy cow, we didn't, you know, this is unheard of.
We didn't make the playoffs? What?
And we got a losing record.
Wait, what?
So, you can't hate this guy. Like, you can't hate this guy for leaving. If you're smart, you know exactly why he's leaving. You know it wasn't harmonious, right? You know it wasn't harmonious. Come on. You can't be a fan of that football team and think those two got along swimmingly. You can't be a fan reading up that on that team every single day, following that team every single day, reading everything you said, watching everything you had, watching the games, everything. You could not watch that team for 2 years, 10 years, 20 years, and tell me that they loved each other and were harmonious and they had a great relationship. They had a business relationship that worked well for both of them. And when he left, everybody should know. Now, there might be a casual fan that's like, I don't really like football. Why would he leave? But if you loved that team, you knew exactly why he left. You know, because it was the nature of an athlete. Can you imagine working somewhere 20 years where you may not have an ego, but you kind of have one, and all you hear about is people writing books about whether it was you or the other guy?
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, I'm the quarterback of this football team for 2 decades, and they still don't know if it was me? They still can't decide if it was me?
I mean, that was the biggest thing, too. I've always likened it this way to, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Right.
mean, because that's the microcosm of Belichick and Brady. You know, would Belichick have won all those Super Bowls without Brady? Would Brady have won all those Super Bowls without Belichick? But we'll never know.
It's, but you know what it is? If I'm Brady, here would be my case if I were to speak honestly about it. It was completely unfair because nobody did that. Well, it's not Joe Montana. It's Bill Walsh.
Right.
Nobody did. It's not Terry Bradshaw. It's Chuck Noll. I mean, Bradshaw called his own plays, but nobody went, oh, it's Chuck Noll. I mean, look what he's doing. Everyone went, no, it's Bradshaw and Chuck Noll. Nobody had to divide those two up into two camps. And for Brady, it was unfair to have a dynasty player coach. Now, I'm not going to put Aikman and Jimmy Johnson in there because Barry Switzer came in, right?
Yeah.
And they won.
So it was Aikman.
He won the third, right? So it was all Aikman. But he's looking at the landscape of it going, nobody had to go through this who had a dynasty in this league but me. None of the great quarterbacks had to have this conversation. Nobody. And I had to. I did this for 20 years, and people are still in camps? I mean, I absolutely would have said, I got to go find another place to go do this. I got to win somewhere else to show people. That makes perfect sense. Right. And it was unfair because those two personalities were so strong that we naturally gravitated. And it was so unique that we naturally gravitated towards, well, what's the winning formula? Because we haven't seen this ever.
Yeah.
Right. Well, whereas Bradshaw and Noll won four Super Bowls out of six, you know, Montana and Walsh, they won Super Bowls in the 80s. But Brady and Belichick, it was 20 years and people needed to know the main ingredient as to why that existed. And Brady probably was just absolutely sick and tired of a coach that didn't understand his value enough to separate him from the pack. And the fact that every single year, everyone was wondering who it was, who was the main reason why this was happening.
Yeah, because what's the other argument that we always have? Name the wide receiver for Brady that, you know, was his Hall of Fame wide receiver.
Sure.
You know
exactly.
I mean? That's where you kind of lean towards Brady, but then at the same time, it's like Belichick's a mastermind at, you know, his plug-and-play system. He's a mastermind at defense.
Sure is.
So, I mean,
sure is.
Keep going back and forth. But, yeah, if you're Brady, you're sick and tired of hearing that.
Yeah. And I'm sure if you're Belichick, it's the same kind of way. It's like, my defensive plan for the Giants is in the Hall of Fame. Right? And I'm not going to not take credit for this.
Or what about for the Rams?
Right? Oh, yeah, and even the Rams, right? But he went, you know, him going into New England saying, look at my past. Look what I brought to the table to this team. Look at my defensive coordinator job. Look at what I was able to do. And you're going to, you know, maybe he feels the same way. Like, you're going to tell me it's all this kid from Michigan? It's all this? No.
He needs
to come back. I'm the one that brought in these guys and made it work. I'm the one that made stars out of guys you've never heard of.
Before this solar storm hits us and knocks out the internet, Belichick needs to write a book.
I know, right?
You know, his side of the story, just a tell-all of I can't even say the word, just all over everybody.
Exactly. All right, it's Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio as we continue. Ryder Cup underway. I'll give you a quick update when we come back.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, as we continue along with Wake Up Call, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. I said, we were just watching the Ryder Cup, and this is awesome. And what a great observation by you. Ian Poulter for Team Europe was on the tee. Now, they're playing alternate shot. So Ian Poulter got the draw to tee off on the first hole in front of that raucous American crowd. And apparently he's wearing a heart monitor he's allowing the television to monitor his heart rate. He had it 133 beats per minute while he was teeing off. Okay, if you're a golfer, real quick, if you're a professional golfer, would you run on a treadmill as fast as you can and then go to the driving range and then try to calm down to learn how to hit with your heart rate going through the roof?
That's a good question.
Like, would you say, look, here's the driving range. If you can bring out a treadmill and a long extension cord, I'm working on cardio, but I want to get my heart rate. Like, because you see this with NBA players. They'll run up and down the court as fast as they can, and then they'll hit free throws.
Yeah.
because they're like, I need to be exhausted when I in order for me to practice free throws properly, I need to be exhausted. And I wonder if golfers do the same thing. Like, how do I calm myself down when my heart's going through the roof?
See, that's what I was finding fascinating, because I would love that technology elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, give me a quarterback running a 2-minute drill.
That's a great idea. That is a great concept.
You know, give me a pitcher on the mound. He just needs one out to win the World Series. I want to know what, you know, because you know they've done this before. The scientists have been there. You know, trainers. Alex Guerrero, yeah. Get on it. You're the only trainer I know.
Can you imagine Joe Buck in the World Series? And we're getting the monitor now. His heart rate is 142 as he releases the 3-0 pitch. I would love that. Are you kidding me?
Just be fascinating. Or you just see someone, like, you know, if it's like Michael Jordan. Yeah, his heart rate's still at 80.
Still at 80. Still resting. I know. It's great. Listen, I'm not
one minute of this game.
I am definitely not. I'm trying to make this clear. I'm not comparing myself to a professional golfer.
No.
But there is nothing worse when I go to a golf course and all of a sudden a crowd is around the first tee. Like, people are waiting behind you. And there's
a crowd. You just need like two or three people who are waiting for you to tee
off. When I'm on the tee with my friends, I'm okay. But as soon as I see that cart that's coming, that's the people behind us, I'm like, oh, crap.
Yeah, can I go first?
Can I go first? Let me get this out of the way. Oh, God, I can't imagine. And because of COVID travel restrictions, the normal contingency of European fans, they're not there.
Yeah.
It's awful.